For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is January the 16th, and we are in Parshas Va'eschanan. We're up to Perakei, that's chapter 5, starting from page 968 in the Stankosh. The Pasuk says, Vayikra Moshe el Kol Yisrael. Moshe called to the Jewish people, Vayomer Aleim, and he said to them, Shma Yisrael, listen Yisrael, Eshachukim Ve'eshamishpatim, Ashonochi Dover Baznechem Hayom. The laws, the statutes that I'm speaking in your ears today, Ulamadatem Osam, you should learn them, Ushmartem La'asosam, and you should guard them to do them. Make sure you do them properly. Guard them and do them. Hashem Lokinu Karasimonu Bris Bechorev. Hashem, our God, He made a covenant with us in Chorev, which is Har Sinai. Chorev is another name for Har Sinai, from Mount Sinai. Lo esavosino karas Hashem es abris hazos. Hashem did not just make this covenant with our ancestors, ki itanu, rather also with us. Anachnu elefo, us, we, who are here today, hayom to, Anachnu elefo, we, who are here, hayom today, kulanu chayim, all of us alive. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, was speaking to the second generation of Jews who left Egypt, since the first generation had already passed away. So he's saying that Hashem was not only speaking to the generation of those who were at Har Sinai, but rather to us, meaning the second generation, as well. Panim b'fanim diber Hashem imachem bahar mitoch ha'esh. Hashem spoke to you from the mountain, face to face, from within the fire. Face to face, we'll talk about that, exactly what that means in a moment. Anochi omeid bein Hashem uvein eichem ba'isahi. I stood between Hashem and between you at that time. Lahagid lachem es devar Hashem, to tell you the word of Hashem. Ki yireisem mipnei ha'esh, for you were afraid of the fire. V'lo alisem bahar, and you did not go up on the mountain. Lamor, and the following is what we heard at the mountain. Now, this is a recap. We're about to have the Aseret Hadibros, the Ten Commandments. This is a recap. The original story of the Ten Commandments takes place in Parshas Yisro, which is actually this week's Parsha. And there it's being told in the moment of when Hashem revealed himself and gave us the Aseret Hadibros. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting what happened. Now, in retrospect, what actually happened is that Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Jews and told them that Hashem will speak to me and you will listen and hear that Hashem is speaking to me. You won't know what Hashem is saying. All you'll know is that Hashem is speaking to me. And you'll know that. Hashem will make it clear to you that He is speaking to me. That will not be a doubt in your mind. You will know that Hashem is speaking to me, but you won't hear what He says. And then I will tell you everything that He says. We Jews did not like that plan, and we asked that Hashem should speak to us directly. So Moshe Rabbeinu went back to Hashem, and Hashem said that the Jews' request is an appropriate request, and therefore I will speak to them directly. Because Hashem was going to speak to us directly, therefore all spouses had to separate. Till that point, there was no need for spouses to separate, because there was no need to have an extra level of tahara, of purity, because we were not going to hear the word of Hashem directly. We were going to hear it indirectly. The only prophecy we would have received was a prophecy that Hashem is speaking to Moshe. But the actual Aseres HaDibros would have been delivered from Moshe to us. But in fact, we asked that Hashem speak to us directly, and Hashem agreed. And therefore, we all needed to separate, just as Moshe had to separate from his wife. We all had to separate. All the spouses had to separate. And therefore, we became pure enough to be able to get that direct communication from Hashem. And the Aseres HaDibros was said to all of the Jewish people. However, we were unable to endure that communication. It was so powerful, we were only able to endure the first two of the Aseres HaDibros. We were only able to hear directly the first two commandments. After that, it was overwhelming to us and we could not listen to the rest. As we will see in tonight's class, we'll see the Jewish reaction to that. So in the end, Moshe Rabbeinu received the last eight of the Aseres HaDibros and relayed them to us, which was going back to the original plan. The original plan had been that all 10 would be said to Moshe Rabbeinu and then delivered to us through him. So instead, we got the first two directly from Hashem, and the next eight, Moshe Rabbeinu delivered to us. All we had was a prophecy that Moshe Rabbeinu was receiving prophecy from Hashem. And then he told us what Hashem said. So here in this introduction to the recap of the Aseres HaDibros, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us that a few very important points. He tells us what I just described, that in Pasuk 8, verse 5, I stood between Hashem and between you at that time to tell you the word of Hashem, because you were afraid. That's referring to the last eight of the Aseres HaDibros. The first two we did hear directly from Hashem, but the next eight we heard through Moshe Rabbeinu because we were afraid. We could not bear to hear directly from Hashem anymore. He also tells us over here a very important point, that Hashem did not only speak to the generation that was there, but also to all future generations. Now, the generation that died out, the first generation that died out, were those who were above 20 years old at the time we left Egypt. There were those who were younger than 20 years old, but nevertheless were already born, already alive, at the time of the Aseres HaDibros. But this description here is 40 years later. So you have 40 years worth of new people being born into the Jewish people who were not alive at the time of the original Aseres HaDibros. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, you should be aware that Hashem was not only speaking to them, he was speaking to us as well. When he says us, he doesn't only mean us as in the moment that he's speaking at the end of the 40 years, he also means us right here, today, in Atlanta, Georgia, in 5782, he was speaking to us as well. And we have a statement from Chazal that all future generations of Jews, the souls of all Jews, were there at Har Sinai for the Aseres HaDibros. That means we were all there in one form or another. So what that means, that the souls were there, I have no idea. Does that mean that somehow we were impacted? I'm sure it does. How were we impacted? I have no idea. But it doesn't matter. The point that Moshe Rabbeinu is making is that the covenant was not limited to one generation. It's not that Hashem made a covenant with one generation and not with our generation. Hashem made a covenant with all generations, including our generation. So that's an important point to be aware of, that there was a covenant made with everybody, not just the original generation, but with ours as well. And finally, the point Moshe Rabbeinu makes in Pasuk Dal in verse 4 is that Hashem spoke to us panim befanim, face to face. We have a phrase in Parshas Bahaloscha where in the incident when Miriam spoke to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu, the Lashon Hara that Miriam said about Moshe Rabbeinu, and when Hashem criticizes Miriam and Aaron about what they said, he tells them, Peh el peh adaber bo. I speak to Moshe Rabbeinu mouth to mouth, meaning directly. This Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is on a higher level than anybody else's prophecy. It's a difference in kind. It's a league in and of itself. And Hashem speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu directly. And there it says, peh, mouth to mouth, which means direct. Here it says face to face. Now that's a phrase that we're more used to because that's the way you say it in English. You say face to face. Theoretically, mouth to mouth is the same as face to face. You're facing each other and you're saying directly what you mean. The difference between peh el peh, mouth to mouth, and panim bifanim seems to be that with Moshe Rabbeinu it is a more permanent direct communication, whereas with us it was not a permanent direct communication, it was for that time. But nevertheless, it does imply a direct communication from Hashem. So as we've explained many times, for that moment, for the first two of the Ten Commandments, when we got direct communication from Hashem, we actually received prophecy on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. The level of prophecy, which is reserved only for Moshe Rabbeinu, that no one else has, we all received that level of prophecy for the first two of the Ten Commandments. And that was a direct communication from Hashem, a clear and direct communication from Hashem. Panim befanim, face to face, meaning a direct communication from Hashem. As we've mentioned many times before, the Gemara in Maseches Makos tells us that the Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded to us the Torah. Torah in Gematria is 611. Tav is 400. Vav is 6. Resh is 200. Hey is 5. You add that up, you get 611. And the Gemara says, 611 mitzvos were told to us from Moshe Rabbeinu, but there are 613 mitzvos, because the first two mitzvos were not told to us by Moshe Rabbeinu, they were told to us directly from Hashem, because we heard the first two of the Aseres HaDibros directly from Hashem. Panim, befanim, face to face, a direct communication on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. As we said, that's why we all had to separate from our spouses before Matan Torah, because we were about to receive the prophecy of the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. In theory, had we been able to handle it, we could have gotten all 10 commandments that way, but we couldn't handle it. Therefore, we settled for 2 of the commandments from Hashem. The other 8, we got through Moshe Rabbeinu. So here, Moshe is giving an introduction to the Aseres HaDibros, to the second generation of Jews, recapping what happened 40 years earlier to the first generation of Jews when we left Egypt. And now we actually have the Aseres HaDibros spelled out for the second time in the Torah. The first time, of course, as we mentioned, is in this week's Parsha, Parshas Yisro, and here we have it again. The Aseres HaDibros was only said once. This is a recap of what had happened 40 years earlier. The words here are almost the same as the words there, but not precisely the same. There are nuanced differences, and there are some very blatant differences. The most significant difference, the one that Chazal use as the example from which we understand the rest of the differences, comes up with Shabbos, which we'll get to when we get to the fourth of the Aseres HaDibros, the fourth of the Ten Commandments, which is Shabbos. We will see the most significant change from the first writing of the Aseres HaDibros to this one, and we'll discuss when we get to that about these differences. So, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, we begin the Aseres HaDibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha she'otzei sicha me'eretz Yisrael mibeis avodim. I am Hashem your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt from a place or a house of slavery. That is the end of the first of the Ten Commandments. That's number one. Even though it's the same paragraph as the second, And there's no paragraph break over here. Nevertheless, that ends the first of the Ten Commandments. Now comes the second one. Lo yi'alecha Elohim acherim al panah, you shall have no other gods, literally means on my face, which means in front of me. Now Hashem elaborates. Lo sa'as halacha fesel, kol tmuna, make no graven image, no picture. Asher b'shamayim mima'al, that is in the heavens above, for instance, worshipping the sun or the moon. V'asher ba'aretz mitachas, and that's on the ground below, worshipping anything down here. V'asher b'mayim mitachas la'aretz, and even in the water that's beneath the land, even that, anything that is represented there, one cannot worship. Do not bow to them, do not serve them. So that would mean don't offer them a sacrifice, don't pray to them, etc. Ki'onochi Hashem Elokecha Kel Kana, for I am Hashem your God. Now, this is often translated as a jealous God. Kel means a God, and Kana means jealous, although usually it can be translated, let's see how they do it here. They translate it as, they do, a jealous God. Can mean a zealous God also. What it means is that Hashem does not forgive for this sin. This is the worst of all sins, and Hashem does not take it lightly. Poked, that is idolatry. Poked avon avos al banim. Hashem says that I visit the sin of the ancestors on the children. Ve'al shileishim v'audi be'im l'sona'ai. And on the third generation and the fourth generation for those who, literally would mean hate me. He says for my enemies. So this means that in the event that someone is someone who's a sinner, let's say they worship idolatry, and then their children worship idolatry, then the punishment for the children will be a double punishment, because Hashem will punish the children not only for their own sins, but for their father's sins as well. The grandchildren and even the great-grandchildren, if all four generations commit the same sin over and over and over again, Hashem will punish the fourth generation four times over for their sins, their father's sins, grandfather's sins, and great-grandfather's sins. It will compound itself. If any of the generations don't do the sin, then that will break that chain, will break that cycle, and Hashem will not punish the children for the parents' sins if they don't do the same sins. This is only if the children repeat the sins of the parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. That's four generations. However, when it comes to mitzvos, it's much greater than that. Vosa chesed la'alafim, and I do kindness for 2,000 generations, Leo Havai, for those who love me, Ulushomrei mitzvosai, and those who guard my mitzvos. So says Hashem in the Aseres HaDibros, that when it comes to mitzvos, if you keep the mitzvos, and your father did, and your great-grandfather did, and your great-great-grandfather did, and your great-great-great-grandfather did, etc., not only are you rewarded for your mitzvah, but you're rewarded for your father's mitzvah, and your grandfather's mitzvah, your great-grandfather's mitzvah, etc., going back 2,000 generations. It is from here that Chazal tell us, Mida tova meruba mimida puronios chamesh meos, that the ratio of Hashem's measure of goodness versus what he does when he punishes is 500 to 1, where for punishment, the range of the punishment can only go as far as four generations, but for reward, it can go up to 2,000 generations, which is a very, very powerful thing. If you think about it, that means if there's an unbroken chain of a family that is keeping a particular mitzvah, the reward then for the mitzvah is 2,000 times just what is done in this generation. It's a very, very powerful thing that there's so much reward for a mitzvah that is perpetuated. For an aveira, it can also be compounded up to four generations, which is somewhat frightening, because that means the punishment can be worse than the crime, of the one generation. But that's the way Hashem does things, and it is far greater for a mitzvah than it is for an aveira. The first of the Aseres HaDibros is to believe that Hashem is Hashem. You have to believe in Hashem. The second of the Aseret HaDibros is the prohibition against worshipping idolatry. Now, this means that it is possible to believe in Hashem and yet commit idolatry. If it's two different commandments, it means that one does not preclude the other. One can, at the same time, believe in Hashem. Hashem took us out of Egypt. And then turn around and bow down to an idol. And they would violate the second of the Ten Commandments. And that's why you need a second dibur. Because just because one says, I believe in God, does not mean that they are not committing idolatry. Idolatry is any type of practice that attributes independent power to any entity other than Hashem. It is to say that the sun has its own power, the moon has its own power, the sea has its own power, the angel has its own power. Whatever it is to suggest and to practice in a way that says that there is some item, some entity that has its own independent power, independent of Hashem, that would be idolatry. So even if one believes that Hashem created the world, Hashem is in control, Hashem is the supreme God, but if they believe that there are, so to speak, minor gods that also have power, that is idolatry. And so one cannot, one has to reject all other powers as being independent power, to understand that everything gets power from Hashem. The sun is definitely powerful, but it's not independently powerful. It got its power from Hashem. The same goes for all other entities. In today's day and age, we don't have the drive for idolatry that was present when the world was created. That was removed in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, the beginning of the second Temple era. Nevertheless, people definitely attribute power to independent things. Today, the most common entity that people attribute independent power to is nature. People say nature is. It runs however it is because they reject the notion that there is a creator. So that is a form of idolatry, to believe that there it is independently powerful, that it has its own own force, whatever you're gonna put, however you're gonna express it, it's irrelevant. But one has to believe that it all comes from Hashem, that nothing has independent power. So that's the second of the Aseres Hadibros. Yes, you have a question. You have to unmute yourself. I'll unmute you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
My first question is, this conversation happened 40 years after the original Ten Commandments. So, it strikes me that during these 40 years, the children of Israel needed to have some, Torah lessons. Otherwise, they would forget all about what they're supposed to be doing. So I'm wondering if Moses was teaching the Ten Commandments during these 40 years, or is this the first time he's brought it up again?
No. They've been learning the Torah the entire 40 years. He's just repeating the actual events of the time. But they have the tablets, and there's a little bit of a debate when the first scroll was written, but nevertheless, they did study Torah for the 40 years.
All right. Okay, good. So I have another question, which is, I just was reading about Saul consulting the witch of Endor, and I was thinking at the time that, well, this is Avodah Zorah, isn't it? Isn't it worshipping idols? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so the practice of Ov and Yidoni, he consulted a Balas Ov, so that is a sin. One is not allowed to do that, but it is not necessarily idolatry. Because there are forms of, we would call it black magic, but what's the best way to put it? There are things that there is such a thing as kishuf and shadim things that we do not know how to access today. Nobody knows how to access today, but they do exist. And it's prohibited to access them, but they do exist. It is a form of, whatever you want to call it, power or energy. They don't act independently. The difference is to believe whether they act independently or not. One can misuse something and still not believe that it acts independently. So the consulting the Baal HaTzov was wrong, but it was not idolatry. He did not believe that the power that she had was an independent power from Hashem.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. So this is the third now of the Aseres HaDibros. Lo sisa es shem Hashem Elokecha la'shav. Do not, literally means lift, but it means don't utter the name of Hashem, your God, la'shav. La'shav here means for no reason. Ki lo yinakeh Hashem es asher yisa es shmo la'shav. Hashem will not make innocent or make clean someone who utters his name in falsehood. It's the, you have, the translation in the Stone of Chumash both times is in vain, but the Targum Unklus translates the first time it says Lashav as in vain, meaning for no reason, and the second time it says Lashav, he translates it as Le Shikra, and falsely. So this is referring to swearing falsely or swearing for no reason. Swearing means taking an oath for no reason. So either falsely, let's say in court, where a person might take an oath that they don't owe somebody money when they really do, and that would be violating this law. And it could also be for no reason, where a person takes an oath when they don't need to, and therefore they are uttering Hashem's name for no good reason. That also would violate this third of the Aseres HaDibros. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Shomer es yom haShabbos lekadsho kasher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Guard the day of the Shabbos to make it holy as Hashem commanded you. Now if you'll hold the place here, this is just so famous we should see it. So if you'll hold the place here on page 968 and turn back to Parashas Yisro, where we have the first time the Aseres HaDibros are written in the Torah, and looking at page 410, at the top of the page, on page 410, here it says, Zochar es yom haShabbos lekadsho, remember the day of the Shabbos to make it holy. So here on page 968, we have Shomer es yom haShabbos lekadsho, guard the day of the Shabbos to make it holy. And on page 410, we have Zochar es yom haShabbos lekadsho, remember the day of Shabbos to make it holy. So we have in one place the word Zochar, remember. The other time we have Shomer, which means to guard. Chazal tell us that the two words, Zochar and Shomer, imply two different aspects of Shabbos, because Shabbos has two halves to it, two parts to it. There is the guarding of Shabbos, that is to keep all of the prohibitions, not to do work on Shabbos. That means not to cook, and not to separate, and not to carry, and all of the various prohibitions of Shabbos, the Lametes Malachos, the 39 prohibitions of Shabbos, that is derived from the word Shomer, to guard the Shabbos. And Zochar, which means to remember the Shabbos, that refers to the commandments, not the prohibitions. So that would be making Kiddush, for example. And included in that is even making Havdalah when Shabbos is over. Included in that might be eating the meals of Shabbos. But it is to remember the Shabbos, to make it holy, that would be the commandments rather than the prohibitions of Shabbos, because there are two parts to Shabbos. Chazal tell us that even though in one place it says Zochar, the other time it says Shomer, they were both said by Hashem at one time, and that's why they're both written. It is impossible for a human being to say two words simultaneously. Ma sheha peh eino yachol ledaber, that which a mouth cannot speak. it is also impossible for a human being to discern two words simultaneously when they hear them. That which an ear cannot hear, which means, of course, the sound waves could enter the ears, but one cannot discern what the two words are. If the two words are said exactly the same time, with the same intonation, and the same decibel level, and the same sound, the same voice, then a human being can't pick out the syllables in a way to understand both words. It may be possible to understand one of the two words, if one really concentrates, but to understand both words is impossible for a human being to do. And Hashem made a nes, it was a miracle. He said Zohar and Shamar simultaneously. We heard Zohar and Shamar simultaneously. We were able to hear them at the same time. They were uttered at the same time. So they also can't be written at the same time, which means, of course, they could be written theoretically at the same time on two different places. But you can't write Zohar and Shamar, one superimposed on the other, in a way that can both be written, both be read. It wouldn't be possible. So one is written in the first rendition of the Aseres HaDibros, and one is written in the second, but they were both said simultaneously. And that gives us a window into the nuanced differences between the first and second renditions of the Aseres HaDibros, that there were some words that were said simultaneously. This is the most famous, Zohar and Shamar, that the two words were said simultaneously. I can't tell you that this is the only reason, but one of the things that we derive from the fact that Zohar and Shamar were said simultaneously is that the two halves of Shabbos go together. That one does not successfully observe Shabbos unless they are doing both things. They are both keeping the prohibitions and keeping the commandments of Shabbos. Both things need to be done in order to successfully observe Shabbos. This also is the reason why women are obligated in all of the aspects of Shabbos. Because normally we have a rule, as you know, that mitzvos aseh shazman grama nashim peturos, which means a time-bound commandment, rather than a prohibition, a time-bound commandment, women are generally exempt. So that would include the mitzvah of sukkah, that would include the mitzvah of lulav, that includes the mitzvah of tzitzis, it includes the mitzvah of tefillin. Women are exempt from those mitzvos because they are commandments and they are time-bound. Shabbos is also a time-bound mitzvah. It is specifically on the seventh day of the week. And it's very clear. It starts at this time. It ends at that time. It's clearly a time-bound mitzvah. Therefore, one would have expected that women would only be required to keep the prohibitions, but not the commandments. Because of the rule that a commandment that is time-bound, women are exempt. Prohibitions, there is no such exemption. So we would have expected that women must keep the prohibitions, but that the commandments are reserved only for men. But because Zohar and Shamar are said simultaneously, we derive from here that anybody who is required to keep the prohibitions is likewise required to keep the commandments. And therefore, women are obligated in the commandments of Shabbos just as that women are obligated in the prohibitions of Shabbos. And that's why women, no different than men, have to observe the laws of Kiddush, have to observe the laws of eating three meals, have to observe the laws of having lechem mishnah, having two loaves, all the commandments, hearing Havdalah, all the commandments of Shabbos, at least the ones that are from the Torah, as opposed to rabbinic, those commandments were said and required of women no less than men in this situation because of the fact that Zohar and Shamar were said simultaneously. Now here it says at the end of the pasuk, "Kasher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha," like Hashem commanded you. The implication is that Hashem commanded us about Shabbos prior to the Aseres HaDibros. Prior to the Ten Commandments, keep the Shabbos, or guard the Shabbos, as Hashem commanded you. Well, when did He command us? So we know that in last week's Parashah, in Parashas Beshalach, we went after the Kriyas Yamsuf, after the splitting of the sea, we went to Marah. And in Marah, the pasuk tells us that Hashem gave us some laws. Sham sam lo chok umishpat. There he gave the Jews certain laws. The Torah does not tell us explicitly which laws, but the Gemara tells us which laws were told to the Jewish people at that time. There were a handful of laws. Some of them include Shabbos, kibud av va'im, honoring one's parents, and a few other mitzvos. How do we know that Shabbos was already commanded to us in Marah prior to coming to Har Sinai? That's because here it says, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, as Hashem your God commanded you, meaning we were already commanded in this prior to Har Sinai. So we were already keeping Shabbos from the first Shabbos following Kriyas Yamsuf after the splitting of the sea. Truth is, after Marah. Once we went from the splitting of the sea to Marah, after that we kept Shabbos because we were commanded. Which also explains why in last week's Parsha, Parshas Beshalach, when we received the man fell before the Torah was given to us. The man fell on the 16th of Iyar. We didn't get the Torah till the 6th of Sivan. So it was several weeks beforehand, before the Torah was given, that the man started to fall. And there, in the story of the man, we have a whole incident involving Shabbos, that the Jews were not supposed to collect on Shabbos, some Jews did collect on Shabbos, etc. So, why would we be dealing with Shabbos if we hadn't yet received the Ten Commandments? The answer is, because in Marah we already were told about Shabbos. Shabbos was a commandment that preceded the Ten Commandments, even though it is included here in the Ten Commandments themselves. And here we have more details. Pasuk Yigil, verse 13. Sheshes yamim ta'avod, you should work for 6 days. V'yasisa chol melachtecha, and you should do all your work, which Chazal tell us means that at the end of the week, we should consider it as if all of our work is done. We should enter Shabbos without a thought about our work anymore. V'yom ha'shvi, the 7th day, Shabbos la'Hashem elokecha, is a Shabbos for Hashem your God. Lo sa'aseh chol melacha, do not do any work. Ata uvincha uvitecha, you, your son, your daughter, v'avdecha v'amasecha, your slave and your maid, v'shorcha v'chamorcha, and your bull and your donkey, v'chol b'emtecha, and all your animals, v'gercha asher b'sharecha, and the convert that is in your gates, l'man yonuach avdecha v'amascha kamocha, so that your slave and your maid will rest like you rest. When it refers here to a slave and a maid, it is referring to not a Jewish slave and maid, because they are anyway required to keep Shabbos. Nothing to do with being your slave or being your maid. This is referring to a non-Jewish slave or maid, and an Eved Kenani, a Shivcha Kenanis, that once they begin working for you and they undergo, as we've explained before, a sort of conversion, they are converted to become slaves, and they are required to keep mitzvos, not all the mitzvos, but many of the mitzvos, and they are required to keep Shabbos. You cannot let them work on Shabbos. Also, animals. Of course, animals are not themselves commanded to keep Shabbos. There's no commandments on an animal. But the owner of the animal is not allowed to have his animal do any work on Shabbos in a deliberate way. The animal is allowed to graze, which means that they're tearing out grass from the ground, that is okay, but we can't let animals do any work, like carry something on Shabbos. That would be prohibited. Or let's say to pull something on Shabbos. That would be prohibited. V'zacharta kiever Yisa Beretz Mitzrayim, you should remember that you were a slave in Egypt. V'yotziacha Hashem Elokecha Misham, and Hashem took you out of there. B'yarcha zaka v'zroa netuya, with a strong arm, and a strong hand and an outstretched arm. Al kain sivcha Hashem Elokecha la'asos es yom ha'Shabbos. Therefore, Hashem your God commanded you to do or keep the Shabbos. So Shabbos is not only zecher l'maaseh v'reishis, it's not only remembering that Hashem created the world, it is also remembering that Hashem took us out of Egypt, that we keep the Shabbos. Hashem gave us the Shabbos to keep. Remember, even though keeping Shabbos is a testimony to the fact that Hashem created the world. That's why we work 6 days. We don't work on the seventh day, just like Hashem. But the mitzvah of Shabbos was only given to us, not to anybody else. And as you know, it is a prohibition that non-Jews are not allowed to keep the Shabbos. That is a prohibition against non-Jews. They're not allowed to keep the Shabbos. And the reason why it was given to us is because Hashem took us out of Egypt and gave us the Torah. So therefore, keeping the Shabbos is also remembering that Hashem took us out of Egypt. It is not only remembering that Hashem created the world, it is something, it is a mitzvah, which is given only to us and not to anybody else. And that, this prohibition that non-Jews may not keep Shabbos is relevant, as you are aware, when there is someone who is studying for conversion, they're not allowed to keep the Shabbos until they actually convert. So they have to make sure to break the Shabbos as they are studying for conversion, because a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. Kaberes avicha ves imecha, honor your father and your mother, kasher tzivcha Hashem elokecha, as Hashem your God commanded you. So here as well it says, as Hashem your God commanded you, which means that we were also commanded about kibud avim, about keeping the Shabbos, about honoring parents in Mara. Leman yarichun yamecha, in order that your lives should be elongated, you should have a long life. Uleman yitav lach, in order that it be good for you. Alo adama, asher Hashem elokecha nosein lach, on the land that Hashem your God is giving to you, which means in Eretz Yisrael. As we have spoken about before, when it says you'll have a long life, that does not necessarily mean in this world, it might mean in the next world. And the Gemara famously speaks about the father who sent the son to send away the mother bird, which is another mitzvah where it says you will have a long life if you keep that mitzvah. And this boy went up the tree to send away the mother bird, thereby fulfilling both mitzvos simultaneously, the mitzvah of listening to his father and the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird, which in both those mitzvos it says in the Torah that he would have a long life, and he fell and died. And so he did not have a long life. And the Gemara says it does not necessarily mean a long life in this world. It means a long life in the world to come. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Lo sirtzach, do not murder. Velo sinaf, and do not commit adultery. Even though we know there are many other prohibitions involving illicit relationships, but the one that is found in the Aseres HaDibros is adultery. Ni'uf is specifically adultery. So don't murder, don't commit adultery. Velo signov, do not steal. And the Chazal tell us this is not referring to stealing money, because in context, we're talking about averos for which one who does them receives the death penalty. So murder, one receives the death penalty. Adultery, one receives the death penalty. Therefore, we're talking here about a type of theft for which one would receive the death penalty, and therefore it is referring to kidnapping specifically, because for kidnapping, one would receive the death penalty. Just in counting the Aseres HaDibros, Shabbos was number 4, honoring parents is number 5, and then we have, did I count that right? I counted that right, yes. Then we have, don't murder is number 6, don't commit adultery is number 7, do not kidnap is number 8, and now we have number 9, v'lo sanev re'acha eid shav, do not bear false witness against your fellow Jew. You're not allowed to be a false witness. So don't frame somebody. That's number 9. And number 10 is velo sachmor eishes reyecha, do not, literally means covet, don't desire the wife of your friend. Velo sis ave beis reyecha, do not covet or desire the house of your friend. Sodeu, his field. Ve'avdo, va'amaso, shoro, v'chamaro, his slave, his maid, his bull, his donkey, for chol asher l'reyacha, and all that your friend has. So the final of the Ten Commandments is not to covet, which means not to desire that which belongs to somebody else. Many commentaries ask the question, how can there be a commandment not to covet? All the other ones are about not doing something wrong. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Do honor your parents. So it's all about doing or not doing something, but it's an action. It doesn't say in the Aseret HaDibros, don't desire to murder. It says, don't murder. If you're very, very angry at someone and you want to murder, I mean, that's not a very good place to be, but one does not violate the Aseret HaDibros just because they want to murder. They violate the Aseret HaDibros if they murder. Chas v'shalom. So here, there's a commandment against actually feeling a certain way. Don't covet. So how can one be commanded about how they feel? So many commentaries speak about this, and one of the most powerful ways to visualize this is that some of the commentaries say is that imagine a person has a deep desire to do something. Let's not use an avera. Let's use something which is nothing. There's nothing wrong with. Person is really, really, really has a desire for an ice cream sundae. They really want that ice cream sundae, and the ice cream shop is across a frozen lake. And they get on the frozen lake and they're running across the frozen lake to get that ice cream sundae. Nothing wrong with that. But as they're running, they suddenly hear a crack under their feet. And they see that the frozen riverbed is beginning to crack. So any thought of the ice cream sundae is forgotten immediately, and all they can think about is, I better get off this lake. And they turn around and run the other way to avoid the falling into the frozen water. So if we can visualize the danger of what an aveira is, of what a sin is, that it's like Chas v'shalom falling into a frozen lake, like one losing their life about being very, very severely damaged, then one would not have the desire to do that which is wrong, because the desire to live outweighs the desire to do whatever it is Yetzer Hara is driving us towards. So that's one way of dealing with this, of how one can control how they feel. That's one method that is mentioned. But it's a nice visual for what one can do about that. So there we have the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments. As I mentioned, this was the second time that they were presented. They were presented before, with a few nuanced differences. Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19. So here Moshe Rabbeinu now tells us the aftermath of the Aseret HaDibros. So the Torah says, Moshe says, Es hadvarim ha'ele, these things, these words, Dibir Hashem al kol ka'alchem bahar, Hashem spoke to your entire group on the mountain, Mitoch ha'ish ha'anon v'ha'arafel, from within the fire, the cloud, the darkness, Kol gadol v'lo yasaf, this very, very strong, loud voice that didn't stop. Vayichtevem al shnei luchos avanim, he wrote them on two stone tablets. Vayitneim Eloi, he gave them to me. Vayihi kishamachem es hakol mitoch hachoshech, and it was when you heard the voice from within the darkness. V'ha'har bo'er bo'esh, and the fire and the mountain was burning in fire. Vatikrivun elai kol rashei shivdechem v'zikneichem, and all of the heads of your tribes and your elders came before me. They came close to me. Vatomru, and you said through them, they were your agents. Hein heranu Hashem Elokeinu es kvodo ves kodlo. Behold, Hashem has shown us His grandeur, His greatness. Ves kolo shamanu mitoch ha'esh. We heard His voice, so to speak, from within the fire. Hayom hazeh ro'inu, this day we see, ki edaber Elokim es ha'adam v'chai, that it is possible that Hashem will speak to a man and he will live. We actually survived the experience, but we are terrified. V'ata, now, lamanamus, why should we die? Ki sochleinu ha'esh ha'gedola hazos, that this great fire will consume us. Im yosfim anachnu lishmoa es kol Hashem Elokeinu od, if we continue to hear the voice of Hashem our God anymore, v'amasnu, we will die. We do not think we can handle this anymore. Ki mi chol basar, is there any flesh, asher shama kol Elokim chayim medaber mitoch ha'esh kamonu, that heard the sound of the living God speaking from within the fire like us, vayechi, and lived? Is there such a thing? It's not possible. We do not think we can handle this anymore. Therefore, kerav atahu shama, you get close and you hear, eis kol asher yomar Hashem Elokeinu, all that Hashem our God says, ve'at tidaber eilenu, and you speak to us, eis kol asher yidaber Hashem Elokeinu elecha, all that Hashem our God speaks to you, vishamanu, and we will listen, ve'asinu, and we will do. So they say, let's go back to plan A. We know we asked for plan B, which is to hear directly from Hashem, but now we have second thoughts. We want to go back to plan A. We want you to hear the Torah and tell it to us. Okay, Pasuk Chavei verse 25, but I see there's a question. Yes.
I know there are a lot of miracles associated with the Ruchos, but these are a lot of words. Does anyone ever comment on those many words being written on the Ruchos?
Oh, the fact that there's so many words in the Aseres HaDibros.
Yes.
Yeah, the Gemara speaks about the dimensions of the Ruchos. They were pretty big. But I don't know. You're asking a good question. See, you're right. There were so many miracles. You could read them both ways. Both, even though they were chiseled all the way through, you could still read them from both sides. Some say you could read them on all four sides, not just the two sides, front and back. You could read them on the sides also. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. It rings a bell a little bit, but I can't place it. Whether there actually is a discussion about how many words. You're just asking, there are so many words over here, it seems hard to fit it in the space of the tablets.
Well, it would be very small writing.
Very small writing, right. That's what it would seem, right. Okay, it's a good question. I don't remember if that's discussed. But
the other point I had was that the first two commandments don't involve actions.
That's true. That's true. You have to believe in Hashem. And the second one is an action. Don't bow down. Don't worship other gods. But you have to believe in Hashem. That's true. But there is a difference between a belief and an emotion. So I think it's easier, because a belief is intellectual. So I think it's easier to accept that we're told you have to intellectually believe something. And it's harder to understand how can we be told that we can't have a particular emotion. I can't desire. But you're right. It is true. The belief is also something which is in our minds and we're required to believe. That's true. 100% right.
Thank you.
Pasuk Chavei verse 25. Vayishma Hashem es kol divreichem, Hashem heard the sound of your words. Bedaberchem Eloi, when you spoke to me. Vayomer Hashem Eloi, and Hashem said to me, Shamati es kol divrei ha'am hazeh asher dibru eilecha. I heard the sound, the voice of this nation when they spoke to you. Heitivu kol asher dibeiru. Everything they said was correct and good. Moshe Rabbeinu thought that when we said we do not want to hear the rest of the Aseres HaDibros, that was a bad thing, because we were, so to speak, God forbid, rejecting Hashem. But Hashem said, no, actually, it's a good thing that they don't want to hear the rest of the Aseres HaDibros from me. Mi yitin, who would give? V'hayo levavam zeh lahem, and this heart would be for them. In other words, they would have this feeling all the time. liyirau si, to fear me, v'lishmar es kol mitzvosai, and to guard all my mitzvos, kol ayomim, all the days, leman yitav lehem, so it would be good for them, v'livnehem le'olam, and for their children forever. It is a good thing that we were afraid to hear the words of Hashem, because it means that we feared Him, and that fear would keep us from sin. Leich emor lahem, this is a very, very pivotal phrase here. Leich emor lahem, go and tell them, shuvu lachem le'ahalechem, you go back to your tents, which means go back to family life, go back to your spouses, go back to acting as husband and wife. Ve'ata in you, Moshe Rabbeinu, po amod imadi, here stand with me. You do not go back to your wife. You remain separate because you're perpetually going to be on a level which requires you to remain completely pure, and you cannot go back to regular family life. Vadabra ilecha, and I will speak to you, eis kol ha-mitzvah, v'achukim, v'amishpatim, all of the mitzvah, the laws, the statutes, asher talamdem, that you will teach them, v'asu v'aretz, they will do in the land, asher anochi nosein lahem l'rishta, that I am giving them to conquer, to inherit. Ushmartem lasos, and you should guard to do, kasher tziva Hashem elokeichem eschem, like Hashem your God commanded you, lo sasuru yominu smol, do not turn right or left, in all the way that Hashem commanded you, you should go. Leman tichyun, in order that you should live. V'tov lachem, it should be good for you. V'harachtem yomim, and you should have elongated days. Ba'aretz asher tirashun, in the land that you conquer, you should be able to live long because you will be keeping the Torah. So this is what is quoted when the Gemara speaks about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to go back to his wife Tzipora, which led eventually to the Lashon Hara of Miriam and Aaron, because they did not feel that it was appropriate that Moshe Rabbeinu remain separate. They did not know that Hashem commanded him here that he had to remain separate. Everybody else is told to go back to their tents. And this highlights the point that as long as we were, so to speak, on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, we were receiving direct prophecy, we were separated from our spouses. But once only Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be on that level, everybody else was going back to quote-unquote regular life and regular prophecy, then they were told to go back to their spouses, to go back to regular family life. And that is the way that we approach this entire area of life, that as a general rule, we don't expect people to live specifically in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu lived. He was an exception because of the level he was on. So he was unable to go back to his wife, but everybody else was told to go back to their spouse. Now the paragraph is not over, so really the paragraph goes further, but it is the end of the chapter. The chapter is somewhat arbitrary. As you know, the chapters have no real source. The chapters were not made up by Jews. But it's convenient for us to have as a stopping point, since we need to stop. So, Mirz Hashem, next time we'll begin from chapter 6.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.